Hey guys, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world. Beautiful day here. I'm slightly sleep deprived, but very, very happy because I've had a very eventful week. And I want to talk about this week as well. But today's episode is very special because I've got a guest. And I just want to introduce this guest to you guys. So before that, I want to talk about Astrowin 2020, the Winter School on Astronomy. I was there last year as well. This takes place in the B.M. Birla Science Center at Hyderabad. Very, very unique program. I don't think there is a program like this anywhere else in the country. I'm not sure. And you know, it brings together professors from around the world, students from different countries. Last year, there were a bunch of professors from Canada who taught us so much about astrophysics and cosmology. This year, we had computational astrophysics, we had astrobiology, a lot of interesting courses. So, one of the best parts about being a part of this, you know, of Astrowin, especially for 2 times in a row, is that you get to meet a lot of different kinds of people, right? Not only the students who come from like all the major cities of India, as well as like Nepal and Turkey, even this time, you also get to meet the profs. And how often do you get the chance to connect with such people, right? These guys have been in the best universities of the world. These people have done groundbreaking research in physics. So it was honestly a privilege to be a part of it, especially getting accepted to it twice is that's it's just wonderful. So one of the interesting people I met there last year itself was Pranav Sharma, and he is currently the curator of the B.M. Birla Museum, and he's actually the youngest person in Asia to curate a museum. So it was very interesting to meet him. And initially, I had to wrap my mind around the fact that he was a 26-year-old leading this whole thing, right? And he's one of the minds behind the Astrowin, and he's been creating this academic opportunities for quite some years now. And given that it's an international collaboration, a lot of people have been impacted by this initiative, right? He's a very, very interesting person. And this time I had the opportunity to sit down and ask him a few questions. So I think it's going to be a fun episode. We just sat down one evening and I was not really prepared at all. It was absolutely like spontaneous questions, whatever came into my mind. Now that I think about it, I probably should have prepared a little bit. But anyway, I don't think it matters because what he has to say is not just interesting, but I think very insightful. And if we can sort of absorb and fully understand what he's trying to say, you will definitely learn something from it. I learned a lot. I learned a lot from him. Both this time and last time. And hopefully, I get to have such interesting conversations with other influential people in the future. But I think this is a great start. I'm so happy that I had this opportunity. So, without much further ado, here is Pranav Sharma. Anything. I mean, whatever comes to your mind, let
You
me
tell
hear
me.
it. Okay, it's on. Yeah. Okay. Tell me.
Tell you what.
So, Pranav
Yes, madam.
what's your story?
What's my story? So, which story and which part of story are you interested in? I have lots of stories. I'm a storyteller.
Yes. Let's hear some interesting stories today. Well, talk to us about some vivid memory which kind of transformed the trajectory of your life.
Some vivid memory that transformed the trajectory of my life.
Yeah, it is
One,
possible.
I don't have vivid memory. I have clear memories. I have a good
Okay.
memory, thanks so much. But I think one thing which really transformed my life is having discussions and fights with Professor Yashpal. Like, good fights. And yeah, it's very interesting, you know. I mean, I had weird ideas, he had very good ideas, and I used to like have good weird idea discussions with him. And then I used to just come back from Noida, not talk to him for some time. Then give him a call one fine day and said, तुझे क्या हुआ? तूने इतने दिन से फोन नहीं किया, क्या हो गया? Nothing, I just didn't want to talk to you. Said, okay, तो तू आ जा.
It's like talking to a girl.
It's beautiful. And it's so lovely. He was such a lovely person. Yeah, and so he came to Agra one of this time to deliver a talk. And I took him to Tajman, so he was not able to walk that much. So he was on a wheelchair and I was just dragging that wheelchair along. And it was very difficult because every third person knew him in Tajman and they wanted to click a picture. And he used to, that cute old man used to stand up, smile for every picture. I mean, I don't know, people were not watching Tajmahal that day. They were just seeing Yashpal there. But that was one interesting moment. I said, nah, this is something has to be done in my life.
What was it about him that inspired you the most?
I think he was very curious.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not afraid to ask questions. And he was one of those people who would say things upfront, irrespective of the consequences. I think that's the kind of person I am.
Mm.
And that's thanks to him.
What did you want to be as a child? Did you have some specific...
Oh my God, that's a story.
Like,
I wanted
have,
to
like,
be
a...
so many things. Right? There was this one time I wanted to be a cardiologist. Then I wanted to become a neurosurgeon.
Mm-hmm.
Then I wanted to become a historian. Then I saw somebody doing a belly dance. I said, this seems very interesting. I think I can learn and teach these things to people. But then that requires a very specific and very niche skill, which I don't think I could master at that point of time. And
like
I was rather embarrassing. So then I like went back to doing history. Then I realized, no, I want to do physics. And that you saw that picture. So that was one of those moments where that inspiration was there because he was talking about cosmic rays. And I mean, look at this, like 90-year-old man talking about cosmic rays as if he's a graduate student. So that thing was...
That's nice that you... Yeah, cosmic rays was something that even I was like hooked on. Like,
I thought the interview is about me.
It can be both ways. At the
no, it can't be.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I'm the guest.
Okay. All right. Guest. Next question. So, what happened after engineering? Okay. Wait. More importantly, why engineering? What happened after 12?
So, let's talk about privilege. North Indian, Brahmin, male. We don't have a voice. Baap ne kehti engineering karni hai. Period. It's a kind of rite of passage that North Indian men go through.
Hmm.
Right. Earlier it was arranged marriage. These days it's engineering.
Wow.
So yeah.
So I'm glad your sister didn't have to.
Oh my God!
You,
I
you
actually
kind of
threw a fit.
Her
I threw a fit. Yeah.
Right. So what happened after engineering? What changed? What did you do? Did you, you know, decide you wanted to do something different, or did you try getting into a normal job? What was your
Nothing like that. I mean, it so happened that me and Shantanu, we were talking and said, why don't you come to Canada and work with me? So I went and worked with
him. How did you know Shantanu?
Oh my, that's a very interesting story. So I met him at this FICCI higher education conference. I was a delegate there. So I have had a keen interest in education policy, so I used to attend all of this. So he was there from the Kalinian delegation. Oh, that's a nice background score.
Yeah, no idea what that is, but okay.
Like,
somebody is certainly trying to
enough.
Remember me, which is not my mother, so I'm happy.
Actually, an interesting part of the podcast would be you in conversation with your mom over the phone. You know,
I do
that
like
reveals
know.
The true.
It's
like,
as simple as
that.
As
a, when you're a son,
no, it's like this. My mother calls and I pick the phone. Hama.
Hama.
माँ खाना खा ली then she asks me खाने में क्या खाया माँ खाना खाया तो खाने में क्या खाया खाना तो तू मुझे नहीं बताएगा मगर नहीं अब ऐसे होगा हाँ and this will go on like 15 minutes and then she like तो फिर अब क्या प्लान है मगर सोने का शादी कर ले like usual conversations. So.
Are you closer to your mom?
I'm close to everybody. So I'm the eldest child in both my families, maternal and paternal.
Right. So, coming to how you entered physics and then...
It was all by accident. I wanted to be a historian and then suddenly I find myself doing physics. Period. I mean, I was always interested in the physical law and I will say that I was interested in physical law all my life. But I never thought of a discipline. And see, when I say I was... wanted to become a neurosurgeon or something. We were there to decide discipline. You have a job description that you have to do.
Right.
Being a physicist, it doesn't have a job description.
It doesn't have a job description. True.
So, so as a curious kid, you want to do things, but you don't have a job description to it. So, I thought, like, do something. Something like natural
certain
philosophy or something. Yeah.
Okay. Nice. So, now you put a lot of emphasis on education. So, when did that interest or... focus come into your
Have
life.
You been to school?
Yes.
Have you seen the state of education?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If that doesn't make you angry, then I don't think what else can. Our education system, if I can use that word, is fucked up. It's bullshit. Regimes are trying to control lives and it is irrespective of who's in the center. And that is not what education is about. And if I may, and these people who are listening, if they are, I mean, not just listening for fun and hearing me crack lame jokes, if you really want to understand how education functions, please read D.S. Kothari's report, the first Education Commission report in 1965, and to Yashpal's report in 2008. You will understand what education means and what they've done to it. If that doesn't make you angry, if that doesn't give you reason to work in education, one, as a sector, second, as a policy, and third, as something that you want to contribute in, then I don't think anything else can.
What do you think is that one thing that can transform education? That one change, if you can bring, will make it better for in our country?
One change. Well, that's very...
Or one significant thing that you find as a loophole.
Well, if people need to get educated in a country like India, all religious institutions, all religious hierarchies should be brought down to dust, destroyed, and education institutions should be erected on their grave. That is the only way. Until and unless people are eating religious opium, they can't be educated.
So we are talking another 1,000 years because India has...
I'm not talking
from...
another 1,000 years. I'm just taking one conscious choice.
Mm.
We don't need religious places, irrespective of what religion it is. We don't need it. We need education. We need schools. We need colleges. We need hospitals, for heaven's sake. We don't need that nonsense. And all of this nonsense happening because these oldies who are sitting at big places, they have their vested interests. Your generation, my generation, all generations in between are very peaceful. The only thing that we are concerned is about our own lives and how they can be peaceful. It doesn't matter to us whether we go and pray or not. Because God as a construct has died. It doesn't mean anything. If you are hungry, if you are uneducated, God will not come and help you. Your hard work will.
Given that our generation is this conscious and we are, we make sense.
Hmm.
So do you think this whole culture will die at least, a couple of generations from now? Because we get it.
Culture is not dying, murder it. It's your world. You have to claim it. They're not going to give it to you.
Okay.
Nobody is going to give anything to you. This is real life. That's how it is. You have to claim it. All second raters, all mediocres, all of them who are vested in NGOs, uneducated, illiterate people, are governing the masses, are dictating terms. And you, like a moron sitting here because you think the change is slow. No, it is radical. Either it is today, either it can happen now, or it won't happen at all. All of that nonsense that things change gradually, please don't believe that to me.
So it has to happen now.
It has to happen now. It is your world. You are young. I am young. We have to claim our world. These oldies will not give us our world. They will make it power hungry. They will make it venomous. They will make it dark. So that old, dingy, dusty, smelly world exists even after they die. That is the idea. And if you believe in sunshine, then you have to put sun up on the horizon.
What do you think about the fraction of us, the young, the youth, who are still, you know, drowned in this world of the past, and they think like the boomers? So what do you think about those people, the people who will take up education as just a hobby?
When I say oldies, I mean orthodox thinking. I don't mean age.
Yeshpal was 90. Age who's thinking
Yeshpal was 90, and Yeshpal was more young than any young person that I've met. This orthodox thinking has to die, and if it doesn't die, murder it, and murder it in cold blood.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. That entire hegemony has to brought down, because what you do now and how you react now will be judged by the generations to come. And you have to prove your mettle right now. You are standing at crossroads, aren't you? And you have to let that comfort go away. I mean, I'm not very sure about other people. I really enjoy the perks of intellectual life. And I really do. You're sitting in my house and you know how it looks like, the kind of people I meet and the kind of talks that we have. I really enjoy the privilege of intellectual life. Right? Having said that, all of us have to let that comfort of that intellectual discussions that we're having in close to school away and do something about it. Conferences will not solve any problems. Conclaves don't solve any problems. Actions do. If you don't like a policy, make a new one. Period. And I've been saying, I think I've said it like a couple of times, you have to claim your word. Nobody's going to give it to you.
And you think more intellectuals should enter the scene where they're making, they become the decision.
Siddhara, all of us are, students are intellectuals. They are organic intellectuals. They are intellectuals. They just have to know that they're intellectuals. They're not dumbasses that their teachers tell them.
Yeah.
They're fairly intelligent people. They just have to know that they raise one voice and they can bring regime on knees. And you've seen what has happened.
Yes.
I don't have to quote anything and anybody.
3-4 months, yeah.
It is evident. Who were they? Students. What were they doing? Dissenting. And what happened?
So you've done engineering and you know the standard of what you received in college, right? And how it remarkable.
Standard is too niche a word for that.
Well, yeah. Well, you know what you received in college, right?
Yeah.
What you bargained for. So how do you think that can sort of change? Because for me, all I felt was anger throughout these 4 years. And I
feel
wanted
angry,
to...
feel frustrated. Congratulations to you.
No, so I had to go out and I did what I had to. To get the kind
exactly.
of education.
Exactly.
But
if you tell me
right?
that, you know,
but
the entire system should change and people should be given opportunity, that's absolute nonsense.
But should the system change or not?
System should change.
Right.
But people should take charge.
Exactly.
You took charge of your life, right?
Yes.
Fine. If other people want the system to change, they should take charge. It's the onus is not on an individual. Onus is on a class. The intellectual class has to take charge. You took charge, you have changed your life. If you want to change the system, the class has to take the charge. It is a pluralistic term that we talk about. It's not singular. One man can change the world. Absolute nonsense. One man changing the world gets killed and lynched and bulleted and buried unsung.
So one man changes himself first.
Exactly.
Right. So let's come back to what you're currently doing. So what is the most exciting thing for you about the future? What do you intend to
Want to devise a technology where I don't have to sleep at all and I can work all the time.
Do you think of yourself as a workaholic?
You've seen me like past two conferences. Do I need to answer that question?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. Well, are you planning to work in the realm of education for the next few years? Are you planning to do research? Do you have your intentions already, you know, categorized in your head, or are you just still in the process of deciding?
Well, there are so many things. I'm consulting. I'm sitting on expert panels.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many things happening. And that's the regular business. I mean, you just sit in a committee, you tell them, and then something happens. And then if a document comes to you, change it. There's some policy drafting that I'm doing.
Yeah.
That's just regular business. But there is something which I want to do, and which time will tell you. I don't think I'll have to say anything about that.
Cool. So you've met a lot of scientists and researchers, right? You've got a great network. So do you sense something in the way research is done in India that you feel should change? Certain things about research here in India. It can be any part of it, whether it is the funding or the way it is done, the process in the middle.
I think I'm
the
wrong person to answer this question.
Really? But
you should ask a career academic to answer this question. I'm not a career academic.
Okay.
I'm not a career researcher. I do it because I like it. I don't do it because I have a job to save or I have a degree to attain.
Right. So tell us about volunteering. What do you think is its importance, and how should people our age come forth and do volunteering? What can we do, and where should we be contributing?
Everywhere. Anything that you can do and support, do it. You don't have to register in an NGO and then, you know, get into a hegemonical structure and then start doing things. It doesn't work like that. If you can take initiative and do something, do it. That's volunteering. And that is the change that we
It's just
at.
Initiative. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you think there should be more research institutes in our country?
I think there will be less number of stupid people in our country as well.
There should be less.
There should be less number of stupid
people. Stupid
people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. What do you think about so many of us leaving to pursue academia in other countries and
I feel very good.
Staying back there?
I feel really good.
Okay.
I don't believe in community. I believe in the individual. My faith is in the individual.
And the opportunities of the individual.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So if he's able to optimize.
And it's a globalized world. It's a globalized world. I'm an internationalist. So it doesn't matter whether a person stays in India or in Europe. It doesn't matter to me.
Okay.
As long as the work is good, as long as he's happy, as long as he's able to do good work, as long as he's able to contribute, fine. Boundaries cease to be when you're looking at the intellectual community.
Right.
It doesn't work like that. Brain drain is an economical term. Brain drain is a political term because regimes are not able to provide opportunities to their citizens. It's not only happening in India, it's happening everywhere. And developed countries are no foreign to this term as well.
How do you respond to people who say, how will the country develop further if all the brain is going out?
Well, I think I would rather make a very strong statement here, but I would refrain from doing it. But I'd politely say this. Brain is not going anywhere. You're pushing them. You're throwing them out. They had no choice but to leave the country. If you had given them good opportunities and nice work environment here, why would anybody go?
Exactly.
Why do families split?
And why wouldn't they come
Why do families split? Because it becomes unbearable to live with people who you love the most. Allegedly.
It's the same story.
It's the same story. And the old grandfather cannot come and claiming that, you know, this guy left the family and he's living alone and he doesn't talk to me. You push that bastard out.
Okay, so I wanted to talk about this other interesting thing, which I think is lacking in our country again. The idea that science has to be a very narrow field and it's just a self-contained thing. But instead, there is actually a lot of correlation with philosophy and there's a lot of interdisciplinary aspects.
So that everything is interdisciplinary. We talked about gender theory and quantum mechanics.
Yeah.
We talked about Newton's laws and political theory. Everything is connected. It's just the way you see it. Universe unveils itself to you in the language you understand. Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is talking about the same thing in several ways because that moron is not able to understand one simple fact. It's the same thing. It's just reiterated again and again in 18 chapters in several ways, the same thing. That's how universe functions. All right, you don't understand this construct of quantum mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is I give you the construct of gender and from there you can understand quantum mechanics. It's the same thing. It's about consumer and the consumed. It's about observer and the observed. You can put that argument anywhere. All human ideas are the same. Interpretations are different. The world is a case. You give attributes to it. And that attributes define how that case will be perceived in a discipline. And there's nothing more to it. If physicists want to stay in their lab and think they're high and mighty, they have my blessings and condolences. The walls of disciplines have to be dissolved. You have to start flowing in those barriers, and it has to be fluid. It's like water. Everything is interrelated. You just have to open yourself up to accept it. It's like this. We were talking about gender yesterday and Anu's talk, and after that I was talking about how consumerism works in gender. Tomorrow so you used to see a particular person in a certain sense, and that sense changes. You feel a little disturbed because that product is not the same as you wanted. The product has changed. I shaved this morning.
And I think all of human ideas, more or less, are imagined tales. If you look at money, money is a fictional tale we tell ourselves. And I think that idea, you know,
want me to respond to that?
Yes. Don't you think so? Don't you think all human structures are just imagined stories we tell ourselves? Isn't a nation just a story we tell ourselves?
Everything is a story, isn't it?
So, is science different in the sense it is not a story?
Who says that?
But it is the only means
we have. Everything is
futile.
everything is futile. And if you're looking for meaning, there is no meaning per se, because meaning's construct changes and it shifts constantly. If X meant something in 16th century, X meant something totally different in the 17th century. If X meant something in January 2020, it means something else in February 2020. Meanings constantly shift. I'm not saying, and sciences do suffer from a certain existential crisis, they certainly do.
Sciences assume an objective reality. Right?
Science is more human than anything. And what is objective reality? What is it? You tell me.
No, because whatever I tell you is subjective, so I can't.
Exactly my point.
Yeah.
Whatever, if you're trying to define something, you're trying to add on to it, right? You add an attribute to it, but are you really defining it? Definition of anything of any sort is all gets wrong towards the end of it, because whatever you're trying to define remains undefined in the end, because as I said, meanings constantly shift.
To me, it feels like suddenly art and logic, those things are not different anymore, because if logic is fluid as well, the way art is.
Hmm.
Right, and you keep science away because you think it's this body of
no
logical thinking.
Every logic is fluid.
Right.
In what frame of reference are we talking about? Logic reads a reference point. Right?
Or is logic the reference point?
Logic certainly serves as a reference point, but it is also has an interrelation. You need a basis set.
Mm-hmm.
To make another set to for it, you need a basis. You can't have elements hanging out like that. You need to have a basis for it. We'd work in causality principles, won't we? And isn't it an infinite loop?
Isn't a postulate just the suspended rule in air then?
It is. That's why it's called a postulate.
We are okay with that. That means science is based on faith as well.
It does. But then we are expounding on the fact whether it sustains the...
There is consistency.
No, I would rather use a beautiful term there. Whether it sustains the magic of logic or not.
On those lines, do you think there is an end to science? Do you think there will come a day when we...
My question is there a beginning to science?
And
where does science begin?
Well, it begins somewhere in the mind of a child who questions the color of a leaf or the
sky.
That's
a beautiful way that you put it.
But that is science.
That's just English.
Know?
That has no meaning. There's no substance to it. What I'm trying to say here is beginnings and ends, sweetheart, is for us to limit. You're putting a boundary condition there. It's like you say that universe is homogeneous and isotropic. You're putting an assumption. The universe doesn't work on an assumption. It works the way she works. It just works the way she works.
So how
you
she
assume
works cannot be put into a box.
Exactly. Wow. You're putting boundary conditions because you want to understand the universe in boundary conditions.
You want to understand her behavior. Is her behavior fully
explained? In boundary conditions, mind you.
It's like understanding a person. Do you ever fully...
You remember, he talks about Minkowski space and Lorentz transforms.
Yeah.
You take Minkowski space out of that construct, then Lorentz transform do stand under question. And Unni is right there. I mean, that's a brilliant idea.
So logic itself is shakable, mutable.
Everything, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is what science teaches you. It will not give you answers. If it is giving you answers, it's religion. It is not science.
It instead gives you more questions. Science, yeah.
Religion is like Facebook. Instant gratification. Instant consolation. You put a status, oh, I'm so sad.
Mm-hmm.
And there's five stupid people who write so many stupid things on that. And none of them mean anything.
But also, religion is like asking a question and then not knowing the answer, so substituting it with something
like
God.
It's just instant gratification.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think my life is worth living. No, God has given you life.
But
we
God is just another puzzle.
Exactly. But then it's instant gratification. It gives you right. Everything is fine. You know, you have an invisible friend who's taking care of you. Even if it's purified. I'm not saying that.
I think that leaves us with a really fluid definition of science itself.
I'm not defining anything. Sorry.
No.
Don't put words in my mouth.
It's almost not definable is what you're saying.
I'm not even saying that it's not definable. I'm just saying it is open.
It's open.
It's open. The moment you say it's not definable, the moment you say it's definable, you're confining.
That itself is a confining.
Exactly. I'm saying the argument is open. And that argument needs to be there. It has to go on.
Mm-hmm.
Because that argument is like a persistent, a consistent process which evolves. It's like it evolves. It's an idea which will go on evolving. It will go on evolving. And the answer to that question whether science will have an end, no.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have boundary conditions. Religion ends at God. Religion will end. And trust me, 21st century will see the end of religions.
Oh, I hope so.
You can take my word on it. We don't need God. We just don't need that concept. And even if there is a God, he has or she has or it has my blessings and condolences because we don't need them anymore. You have to believe in yourself. You have to work for yourself. If you want this world to be peaceful, stop praying, start working. Because that will make it peaceful. No prayer will make the world peaceful. Stop killing people. That will make the world peaceful.
How do you drive sense into the world? Can you? With activism, with your words, with your actions. But can you remove hate? Because that's what I see when I look out. I see so much.
You don't have
hate.
To remove hate. You just have to start love. The romance has to come back. That mystery has to come back. That little remoteness has to be there. We just have to love. Irrespective of what and how and where. Fall in love, fall out of love, do it day in, day out. Be persistently in love. It will not remove hate, but it will increase the number of people who love. And eventually you'll outnumber them. The kiss has to mean something. Even if it is momentary, even if it is for 2 seconds, even if you part, but at that instant it has to have that element of love. If there is a meaning that you're seeking, that is something what you can seek. Because that is something which is in your hand, because that is something which you can consciously choose. You can consciously choose to love.
Right. So I think we'll end with a small question.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to a 22-year-old who's just out in the world for the first time, dealing with her, you know, all her insecurities and fighting her own battles and has big dreams, and if you have to give some advice to a young person?
What I would do is the following. I will hold a hand and say, it's all right. You're not alone.